Revolutions Per Minute is a weekly radio show from the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America. Recorded live at WBAI 99.5 in Brooklyn every Wednesday at 9 p.m. RPM's about doing the work to build a democratic socialist future. Each week, hear the latest news, analysis, and organizing experience from the minds and hearts of activists fighting every day in New York City. Join the movement at socialists.nyc.
Hey, New York City, this is Lisa Shi, and you're listening to Revolutions Per Minute live on WBAI. A socialist radio show and podcast from members of the New York City Democratic Socialist of America. The Democratic Socialist of America is the largest socialist organization in the United States, with 90,000 members nationwide, and New York City DSA is its biggest chapter. We are run by our 7,000-plus members and organizers who are working together to build democratic socialism in all five boroughs. I'm Lisa Shi, and I use she, her pronouns, and am joining you all tonight from occupied Canarsie and Muncie Lenape land in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. And if you're like me, you were maybe shocked to realize it was May 19th today, and we are almost through the month of May, which means that there is only 3 weeks left in the New York State legislative session, and that means there's only 3 weeks left to pass any bills statewide. And the city primaries are following up close behind, and that means socialists are in the streets. Tonight, we'll hear from comrades in Astoria who are fighting to pass public power, as well as comrades in Sunset Park who are working to elect DSA-endorsed candidate for city council, Alexa Velez, and we'll also talk to Alexa herself about how her mother's and her family struggle for Puerto Rican liberation and being a mother herself fighting for her own kids' education has shaped her politics and about her community's vision for District 38. And first, the headlines with Amy Wilson.
Hey, what's up, New York City? This is Amy Wilson with your headlines for today, Wednesday, May 19th, 2021. Let's start with election news. The first mayoral primary debate happened last week, and basically nobody said anything interesting. The MTA's leadership made unofficial endorsement of the several mayoral candidates who support increasing police presence in the subways, including Eric Adams, Sean Donovan, Catherine Garcia, Ray McGuire, and Andrew Yang. The New York Times and the Daily News endorsed Catherine Garcia for mayor. The New York Post endorsed Eric Adams. The New York Criminal Bar Association is calling out the record of Diana Florence, a candidate for Manhattan District Attorney, citing multiple accusations against her for prosecutorial misconduct. Color of Change PAC, which is dedicated to electing reformist prosecutors, plans to spend $1 million in support of Alvin Bragg's bid for Manhattan DA. City Council member Adrian Adams, Democrat of Jamaica, one of the few sitting council members who is not term limited, is balancing a run for City Council Speaker while also fending off a challenge from Reuben Wills, who held her seat before being removed from the council due to an ethics conviction that was since overturned. And in local news, NYC Pride has banned the NYPD and other law enforcement groups from its parade through 2025 and says it will hire private security instead. Individual officers who show up in uniform will be allowed to march. According to the governor's office, over half of the adults in New York are now fully vaccinated. The city correction commissioner announced her resignation on the same day as a report from a federal monitoring agency citing a pervasive level of disorder and chaos in the department. Use of force rates against inmates at New York City jails are at a five-year high. And finally, this past Saturday, thousands of people rallied in support of Palestinian liberation in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. And here's what it sounded like. At our 2017 National Convention, the Democratic Socialists of America endorsed the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement in solidarity with Palestinian liberation. Here's our comrade from Portland DSA, Olivia Catby Smith, explaining the importance of BDS.
My name's Olivia. I'm a member of the Democratic Socialists of America. I am also the North America coordinator for the BDS movement, and I'll talk about that in a second. So we're here today to listen to stories of the Nakba, the catastrophe, which we know is ongoing. The ethnic cleansing of Palestine has never ended. I want to tell you some things you can do about it. How many of you are here at an Action for Palestine for the first time ever? Can I see some hands? Amazing. Welcome. Thank you for being here. I think it's really great that there are so many people out here today. There are so many actions happening today across the United States. We have statements of solidarity from celebrities and politicians like never before. Our own Bosnian beast, Yusuf Nurkic, Portland Trailblazer, spoke out for Palestine. Thank you, Nurkic. But we also need more than just statements of solidarity. And actually, we need to put our solidarity into action. And that's what I want to talk to you about today. So BDS, for those who don't know, stands for Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions. It's a call from Palestinian civil society. Palestinians got together in Palestine in 2005 to issue this call for the international community. The BDS call is modeled off the South African anti-apartheid movement, and Palestinians are calling on us as the international community to boycott, divest from, and sanction Israel until Israel complies with international law by meeting three demands. Number one is ending the occupation and dismantling the illegal apartheid wall. Number two is full equality for Palestinian citizens of Israel. And number three is the right of return for Palestinian refugees. So these are the demands of the BDS call, and you can think of it like a picket line. For those of us who are familiar with the labor movement, we would never cross a picket line if workers there were on strike, you know, until their demands were met. And you can think of BDS the same way. We don't cross the picket line. Why BDS is important is because it can take us from sympathy to action. It's very easy to say we sympathize with the Palestinian cause, we're in solidarity with the Palestinian cause, but there is something you can actually do, and that's ending the complicity of our government and institutions right here at home.
You just heard Olivia Catby Smith of Portland DSA on the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement. Down with settler colonialism, Palestine will be free. I'm Amy Wilson. Now back to the studio for tonight's show.
Our headlines are brought to you by The Thorn, an incredible weekly newsletter by New York City DSA Electoral Working Group covering local politics and radical activism. You can subscribe at thethorn.nyc. And if you're a regular listener of RPM, you've heard us talk about public power on many episodes this year and in past years. And one of the public power bills, the New York Build Public Renewables Act, is gaining momentum across the state. But with so little time left in the legislative session, like many progressive bills, it will need a massive mobilization to get it across the finish line. On Monday, I was in Astoria, where comrades were holding a press conference in front of the Con Ed complex, a massive amount of land that houses multiple fracked gas power plants and a fracked gas storage system. If the Build Public Renewables Act is passed, all the state-owned fracked gas power plants at that Astoria complex would have to shut down by 2025 and be placed with renewable energy. Let's take a listen to some of that press conference.
Energy is a human right. Fight, fight, fight. Clean energy is a human right. Fight, fight, fight.
In the U.S., if race is the biggest indicator of whether you live near toxic waste, that's an environmental justice issue. So we need to name it, and we need to blame it, because this is fueled literally by extractive capitalism that puts profit over people. In fact, our energy system, our utilities, are an extractive, pollutive system. So private companies who operate our utilities have this perverse incentive to build fossil fuel infrastructure that causes disproportionate harm to black and brown communities, because they need to make a profit for who? Their shareholders! Right.
Environmental justice is racial justice. Yes. When we think about and the surrounding neighborhoods. I think about my mother. She grew up in Woodside Houses. She's a chronic asthmatic. I connect that to today, right in the middle of a pandemic, and how much fear, trauma, and isolation there was around the fact that knowing that she had this condition that was going to make her more susceptible, more vulnerable to this disease that's spreading, but also the fact that she's a Latina woman meant that she waited so much longer than her white counterparts to get vaccinated. And that is all connected to our systems, right? When we talk about our health outcomes and how they disproportionately affect our Black and brown communities, we have to connect it to not just racist policy, but violent policy.
We cannot leave 51,000 good union jobs on the table as part of this recovery.
Right.
We just cannot sit here and let it stall where it's currently set. I live just two blocks from here right now. Since I've moved to Astoria, my doctor is walking me through figuring out what's wrong with my breathing. It's going to be asthma. We all kind of know it. We live in Asthma Alley right over here.
Right.
Every time I get up in the morning and I see the plant, I know and I believe we can do better.
Yes!
We have to do that by passing this act and passing public power now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're here for public power, right?
Yes.
What do we want?
Public power.
When do we want it?
No.
What do we want?
Public power.
When do we want it?
No.
I said, what do we want?
Public power.
When do we want it?
No.
I am so honored and proud to be here alongside all of you, the organizers, the ordinary people of our neighborhood, of our city, and alongside colleagues who are making this legislation into a reality.
Yeah.
So I really want to first do a round of applause for everybody who has set this event up, everybody who is pushing this legislation in Albany. It's only as a collective that we can make this happen.
Yeah.
So we are here for many things. One is a specific piece of legislation. I want to bring this man's hand up right now.
Bobby!
Mr. Bobby!
Yeah.
Principal from Hart Slope. And we're also here for the fight for public power as a whole, because this bill is part of our larger struggle for publicly owned and democratically controlled utilities.
Yeah.
And that comes from our belief that electricity is a public good.
Yes.
You cannot survive without electricity in this world today. And yet we have people being priced out of their basic human rights.
That's right.
We have people whose dignity is being left aside so that we can prioritize CEOs' profits. And what this bill would do is start the battle legislatively for the future that we all deserve and for the future that we are here today to demand. We are talking about 51,000 jobs. We are talking about the end to late fees that are predatory. We are talking about the inability for a corporation to say that your electricity is being shut off today.
That's right.
We are talking about a mandate to build and own in a public manner renewable energy across this state.
That's right.
It is Bobby Carroll's legislation. It is New York City DSA Eco-Socialist Working Group's belief and principle and commitment that is going to take these things from something that they call pie in the sky and make it practical right here on the ground. So we need these things, and they will tell us that we have false choices. They will say you can either push renewable energy or you can push for jobs. And we know that is fundamentally bull.
That's right.
51,000 jobs. 51,000 jobs from this legislation. This legislation would make our air cleaner right here in the dirtiest air that we have in the entire borough of Queens. This legislation would combat the climate crisis. This legislation would protect working class people's bank balances. And this legislation would create more jobs for those very same people, prioritizing people who will be laid off as this climate crisis accelerates and as the fossil fuel companies begin to shut down.
Yeah.
So know that you have a friend in me and a comrade up in Albany fighting for this. I'm so proud to be alongside these champions, to be one of many of you as a member of the Eco-Social Working Group. And know that every single day that we do not pass this is a day that we are choosing fossil fuels over our future.
That's
so
right.
Let us stop that. And let us start building the future that we deserve and the future that we're here to demand.
Yeah.
Thank you all so much.
Blue Street.
Our city.
Blue City.
Our city.
Blue Tower.
Our power.
Blue Tower.
Our power.
Blue Tower. right.
Hi, everybody. So I am Emily Gallagher. I'm the assembly member for District 50, which is your neighbor in North Brooklyn. We come right over the bridge, over one of the federal Superfund sites in our state. And my district is full of state Superfund sites as well from polluting industries such as gas and oil industry. And we are also still fighting a frontline fight of the North Brooklyn pipeline
that they
are trying to build an LNG plant, which is liquefied natural gas, which is incredibly explosive in my district. So not only am I here because I share your air and I share your water and I share the same public health concerns, I'm also here because we are having the same fight about the future in my district that you all are having here. And I think this is really important because they want us to think that this is the only way, and they are unimaginative, and they don't put any real effort into shifting away from fossil fuel. For example, Indian Point just closed, and instead of us really investing in a totally new energy system, this could be a template for us. What do we have coming in instead? More fracked gas. Letting New York State be run by the shareholders of oil and gas industries. That is why I ran for office, and that is why I am fighting for public power across the state. So Astoria's struggle is also North Brooklyn's struggle, and I am waiting and hoping and working so hard, pushing for Bobby's bill and for more bills that imagine a new future, a future of renewable energy, of safe and healthy energy to push through our state to give us a new future, not this one. So, thank you for having me. I'm your friend in Brooklyn. I'm here for you. Okay, thanks.
So we're here in Astoria. We're right in front of where NRG has a massive frack gas power plant, where the New York Power Authority has a frack gas power plant, where Con Ed stores LNG. And we just had this like really rousing like public power press conference. People are for it. But what is it going to take to get this bill passed in the next? We've only got a month left. What do we got to do?
So that's right. The legislative session ends June 10th. So that's less than 4 weeks from today. Albany's kind of designed this way to prevent the working class from becoming involved in governing itself. And we need to keep working through mass outreach, doing mass public education. We have 3 phone banks per week scheduled for the rest of the session, Wednesday, Thursday, and Sunday. And you can sign up for those phone banks at ecosocialists.nyc/events. That's ecosocialists.nyc/events. We really need as many people as we can get on the dialer so that we can be reaching our communities and getting them involved and putting pressure on Albany to put this bill to a vote this session.
You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener sponsor WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast app. You just heard from Gustavo Gordillo of the New York City DSA Eco-Socialist Working Group talking about what it's going to take to pass the New York Build Public Renewables Act, one of 2 public power bills. And earlier in that clip, you also heard from DSA-endorsed city council candidate Tiffany Caban and socialist assembly members Emily Gallagher and Zoran Mondami. There's just 3 weeks left to pass the bill before the end of the June 10th legislative session. And then following up very close behind that is the June 22nd primaries here in New York City. On Sunday, I went to Sunset Park for a canvass for Alexa Aviles, the DSA-endorsed candidate for District 38, and talked to comrades about why they are volunteering for Alexa's campaign.
A ver, ahora vamos a oír de Marcela primera. And then we'll hear in English.
Dale, Marcela!
Dale.
Buenas tardes a todos y gracias por estar aquí. Thank you everyone for being here. I know your time is very valuable and important, and you can be anywhere else doing something different, but you're here giving of your time. Because we're here trying to ensure that our next city council representative is someone who's going to fight for us in the working class. Our civic engagement is very important because there's people in positions that are taking, that are making decisions that are impacting us for generations. And so we must ensure that they have our true values when they're heading into office and when they're making those decisions. So for me, it's really important for everyone to know that my candidate and the person that I'm going to be working with, building building working class power, is Alexa, and that's who we need in the city council office.
I'm proud to be among community leaders, right, because this is about us as a movement. This is about us making the change together. So we are fighting for our community. We're fighting for resources that we deserve. We're fighting for dignity and rights, right? We're fighting for education, quality education for all children. Thank you for being here, and I look forward to continuing to work together, because it doesn't end with elections. It's every day of our lives. So gracias, mil gracias. Thank you so much.
My name is Sarai Cuate, and I am a domestic worker. I've been here in Brooklyn. I was raised here for my own self. I know I just take this moment for my own community, because my Latin community is in need of so many help, so much help, and especially women and older women. They need trainings, they need jobs. We need rent assistance, and most of them are immigrants, and we really need this time with Alexa, if she could help us out, like support us.
My name is Paul. I'm a South Brooklyn DSA member.
What's your name?
My name is Rob Santos, and I'm in South Brooklyn DSA as well.
And why are you spending your Sunday out here in Sunset Park canvassing for Alexa?
I believe and support the vision that Alexa is running on, which is sort of a socialist run city council that's focused on the needs of the working people and the working class over the business class and real estate developers and millionaires and billionaires. Her platform for more affordable housing and sort of a reform or abolishing the zoning or land use zoning laws that currently exist that put developers' needs first ahead of the communities.
I've lived in Sunset Park for a decade, and I'm also a middle school teacher, so both Alexa's like deep roots in the community and her connection to parents of this community through her education activism and her time as a PTA president of her daughter's schools really makes me feel like she'll be a champion for in this age of austerity that we're in, that she'll be someone who is there fighting for just education, and not just education justice, but also education justice with a specific anti-racist, pro-immigrant family perspective. That's really what has been motivating me to volunteer for Alexa through these last few months, and I'm really excited to spend my time fighting for her.
Yeah, and so it sounds like you've volunteered before today too.
Yeah, I volunteered quite a few times, just mostly doing phone banking and door knocking, and it's been really great to get to meet my neighbors in a way that's different and talk to my neighbors instead of just saying hello, talking to my neighbors about what really matters to them and what issues are important to them, and then relating them to how they fit in with Alexa's vision for this neighborhood and for the city.
Yeah, I guess I was wondering, like, how have people responded, you know, when you've been talking to her about this?
Yeah, people are really excited. You know, it's canvassing is a mixed bag. You know, you get like one or two people, you know, per 10 or 20 who are like really excited to talk, and you get a lot of different, you get a lot of mixed politics, but once you relate it to something that they feel in their everyday life, that's usually when you get really positive, you have really positive interactions with people.
hopeful, and, you know, there's about a month left before the election. You know, why should comrades, you know, come join you, say, next weekend or the following weekend?
Yeah, I mean, comrades should be, you know, volunteering for all of our slate. I think that it's really important that we win as many of these races as possible. Our slate will be so much more powerful. They all have different strengths that will complement one another, and they also will provide a sort of block in city council. So Alexa's amazing. She's great. Please come volunteer for her. But all of our slate needs volunteers. So if you can't get out to Sunset Park, get to the closest race you can and volunteer for that race.
That was Assemblymember Marcela Matenas, DSA-endorsed City Council candidate Alexa Aviles, and comrades volunteering for her campaign on Sunday in Sunset Park. Alexa joined RPM to talk more about her campaign and her community's vision for District 38.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. To all the listeners, so excited. My name is Alexa Aviles, and I am running in District 38, which is Sunset Park, Red Hook, and portions of Borough Park, Diker Heights, Windsor Terrace, and South Slope. So I guess a little bit about me. I am Boricua. I was born in Puerto Rico. My family had one foot in Puerto Rico and one in the Lower East Side. And when my dad was murdered when I was five, we ended up in East New York, Brooklyn, where I grew up. So I'm a Brooklynite through and through. In terms of, you know, I feel like my kind of political beginnings really emerged from my mom, who is an incredibly resilient, powerful woman who really believed in Puerto Rican independence. And so, you know, she made sure to really, like, you know, ingrain in me the importance of self-determination and you know Puerto Rico's history of being, you know, rused by the United States government, right? Telling our people that they were going to help them fight for their own liberation, and then swooped in and just became colonizer number two. The battle that we're still fighting to this very day. So her political roots in independence and anti-imperialism were always something. And then, you know, Black liberation were really what grounds my politics. And certainly over the years, actually, you know, when I decided to run for office and started hearing more about DSA and learning more about the platform, I was like, holy cow, I'm a socialist. I had never identified that way. And because I had just always identified as, you know, Puerto Rican independence, you know, who believed in Black liberation. So socialism as, you know, being part of DSA is probably just a few years old for me. So I'm definitely a work in progress, and I've so enjoyed being part of this movement because we all want the same things. We are fighting for the same things that my mother was fighting about and teaching me about when I was a kid.
Yeah, and reading about you, I've hearing you speak on Sunday, you know, obviously being a mother is another thing that has really motivated you. And, you know, one of the canvassers I talked to was a teacher. So, you know, your position on education, being involved in the PTA, you know, I saw your shirts that say, you know, fight for education. So this is definitely a cornerstone of your campaign, but also I think something that people are paying attention to citywide. You know, we're seeing other elections where politicians are attacking teachers for, you know, not reopening schools. So this is something that people obviously care a lot about. Can you talk a little bit about how you see city council's role in education and, if elected, what you hope to do?
Yeah, you know, I'm so proud to be centering education, you know, in our platform. And obviously it's been a center of our life and our community for decades, right? And we know that, you know, education is the most prized public good, and the commodification of education and racial capitalism is what we see, right? The inequities perpetuated. All these outcomes are exactly a result of racial capitalism, right? The structure is set up to make sure that inequities are perpetuated. So for me, it's so important and just like so natural that this is the place, right, where we, if we want to, you know, end capitalism, we want to end inequities, that we have to do it through education. I always say Wilma Mankiller, who is an Indigenous leader, has this really great quote that I often mention, and it's really like, we can't, she said, I don't think anyone anywhere can talk about the future of their people or of an organization without talking about education. Whoever controls the education of our children controls our future. And I really feel like that is just so critical to our future, right? To the socialist future that we want to build. And so in city council, sorry for that long-winded big context, but, you know, for what that means in city council is, you know, not only we are going to get an influx of resources, right? We have been fighting for fully funded public education. We have been fighting for equity in all elements of education. We've been fighting for culturally responsive and sustaining education, and not just in policy, but in true practice and form, right? So that looks like both holding the Department of Education accountable, and many will argue that it has been an unaccountable agency, and obviously mayoral control is a big part of that. So, you know, we don't believe in mayoral control. We believe in democratically elected bodies that includes parents and youth in meaningful roles, not as kind of a tag on, which is what they currently have, or in bodies that they're really just they don't form a meaningful block within those bodies to really be able to move policy and be really part of a conversation. So, you know, I think those are all the things that we're going to be fighting against, basically structures that perpetuate inequity, right? Tests that perpetuate segregation. We'll be fighting for allocation of resources, like I mentioned, culturally responsive education, to actually fund meaningfully and robustly what that means. And it's not just like, here's a curriculum, good luck with that, right? It's true engagement with the educators around what this means. Creating an anti-racist system is a process. We all are decolonizing. And, you know, it's a long-term process that's going to require real investment and commitment. And so these, we want to get at some real structural issues at the city and state level, quite frankly, because our education system is bifurcated in that way.
Yeah, there's so many interesting points and things I would love to expand on that you talked about there. But one thing that was kind of that like sparked is, you know, talking about actually having the students be a part of that and how that's such a fundamental thing, you know, especially with the youth that we're seeing today, you know, especially in the climate movement and, you know, just so many different movements for liberation. Like we really are seeing young people at the forefront of this, and to make sure that they're actually centered in decision making shouldn't be radical. But, you know, that is actually such a huge difference than what's happening right now.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, you think of all the kind of major pivot points in this country, right? Historically, they were led by young people. They were sparked by young people. So, you know, it's not anathema that young people are, you know, making the shifts that we need, or sparking the conversations and changing the flavor and the urgency, right? I think historically we've always seen that, but what we do see at the same time is this perpetuation of structures that keep young people out of meaningful decision-making. And I think that's something that needs to change. Think like even with school reopening, right? It's like, had you ever asked a student, you know, the 1.1 million young people that you purport to, you know, hold their best interests, were they ever engaged in this conversation around what they need and how they vision what was being offered to them? And, you know, the answer is no. So we need to structurally make sure that students are engaged in all the local governing bodies that are established in the education systems, like the school leadership teams, or, you know, at the district level, there are things called community education councils. And certainly at the city level, where we have what's now called the Panel for Educational Policy, which is really should be a school board and should be a democratically elected school board, which it is not. There are no student voices on that body. So that all really needs to change. I think young people have been telling us, we have an agenda, we know what it is, and you need to give us the space. And I'm delighted to fight for that and create those spaces.
Yeah, and not just for students, it seems like, you know, about creating spaces at the table, you know, for all community members is, you know, a part of this. And a lot of that comes around, you know, what is the future of, like, development for our communities? Obviously, for a long time, you know, the whole city was watching what was happening at Sunset Park and still is around the rezoning and then the plans for, you know, Industry Cities plans. So I'm kind of curious, you know, what's your vision for the future of this area and how that relates to your environmental platform? Because obviously that's a huge part of, you know, any forward movement in the city, especially a district like that, that is such a waterfront district that has already been hit hard by climate change.
No, it's so true. So I guess what I'll say is, you know, my vision is not my vision, right? It's the vision of community members and organizations that have been working on this for decades, who have been, you know, pushing back against the city for policies, right? When there is no kind of mitigation, adaptation policies for our waterfront and doing kind of economic development du jour as usual, right? There have been activists here in this community that have been saying, no, that's not what we need. We are a frontline community that has been disproportionately impacted by all these compounding oppressions. And so, you know, from my perspective, it is about elevating those voices, right? Elevating our voices and supporting that vision. And, you know, that vision is to maintain a working waterfront, but that a working waterfront that is clean, that is providing good union jobs, and that is meeting us where we are and where we need for the future. So, you know, I think I am proud to support so many different elements that have been put forward by our community members, around, you know, the green, the grid is a plan that has been put forward by UpRose. I think, Climate Works for All has put together an incredible, recovery plan around just transition and what that looks like for waterfront communities, you know, including electrification of the ports, right? So, like, how to preserve our working class waterfront, creating jobs and obviously doing it in a sustainable way is critical for us. And I'm all for that. So that's the fight that we are going to be trying to hold, and also hold community voices in that process. So that's what we're working for.
Yeah, I mean, UpRose has definitely been a community that's, like, really showing, I think, the whole nation what, you know, a Green New Deal can be, you know, and the what's exciting about that is the vision of what it can be, you know, especially waterfront communities that have been so industrialized, you know, really seeing the impacts of capitalism and what it means to be the extraction zone.
That's right.
And showing what the opposite can be is definitely something that's very exciting.
Yeah, and we're hoping, you know, a part of that work includes, like, you know, investing in cooperative solar, right? Decommissioning things like the peaker plants, which we have several here, you know, on our waterfront. It means, you know, how do we continue to invest and shift the market into regenerative possibilities, right, that don't harm us? Because we have too many contending, you know, we've got the BQE and all these polluting infrastructure, you know, and more. We keep getting proposals for more stuff, right? They just want to put every polluting possibility here. I think, you know, city is used to having its way. And certainly corporations are used to having their way of being able to identify kind of communities they can just do what they want. So I'm so excited. And have been honored to, you know, stand in partnership and stand behind many of our leaders who have been saying, hell no, not on our watch. We've had enough.
Yeah, and one other thing that's exciting, I was just in Astoria, you know, which is another waterfront community where there's a bunch of power plants similar to Sunset Park and the Peaker, and you know, Tiffany Caban was there, and it was for public power, you know, which is a statewide campaign, but very exciting to see the DSA slate support that.
We are, so excited about public power campaign. And, you know, it's amazing. We talked to residents all across the district for years, right? Because the campaign, I was canvassing a lot for Marcella Mitayenes, who's now our current assembly member, and, you know, DSA for the state slate. And we were talking about public power in the community. And people were like, yes, like, why are we, why do we let these corporations do what they want, charge us the most money, use our public dollars to subsidize this, and it's killing us at the same time? So I think it really resonates with so many community members, and we continue to integrate, public power in our in all of our kind of community conversations.
Yeah, that was another kind of question I had for you is, obviously DSA campaigns and any, campaign that's really rooted in organizing is rooted in a ground game and talking to people at their doors and on the streets. You know, what has your experience been like so far running this campaign and talking to your community? You know, how are people responding to the ideas that you're running on?
Yeah. Thank you for the question. You know, it's been so... The on the ground talking with our neighbors, it's what I do naturally and the part that I love the most, right? I think for many of my neighbors, a good chunk, they're like, Alexa, I know you, I know what you stand for. And even we've received messages where, maybe I don't fully agree with you on this policy piece. I know you are a person of integrity and you've been helping families here for so, so long. So being on the doors has been just really fantastic. And I think, the messages, education, justice really resonates. There are so many children and families and immigrant communities really feel like education is critical for their communities, for their children. So those messages truly, really resonate. We have so many educators in our neighborhood, in our district, actually, which is really amazing. I think people recognize, we're in a precarious balancing spot of like, we're recovering, right? Food insecurity is still significant. People, loss of jobs is still, the dangling of being able to hold on to your home, right, is still very much at play in our district. And so people are really unsure about what the future holds. But they're also really excited to talk about doing things differently and seeing and embracing what some people consider as radical. I'm like, there's nothing radical about, human dignity. Like this should be the floor. Like, healthcare for all. I think people, immediately like, yeah, like we should have these things. So I think folks have been really engaged and excited to talk. I mean, the coming out of pandemic, right, when we've all been trapped in, our computer screens. So I think, so many residents are just really happy to talk about it and talk about the things that we need as a community and how we together are going to collectively not only push, but change the systems that perpetuate these things. And so it's been really exciting, I will say.
Yeah, it was very nice to be there on Sunday in Sunset Park. It was such a beautiful day. I hadn't, so many of these interviews and stuff have been, through computers and stuff. So it was so great to see the community who was so excited for you. And as you mentioned, one of those people were Marcella. How did her run, did that impact you at all in the run of other DSA candidates? And what's it kind of been like to not just be running as an individual, but as part of, the DSA slate?
Yeah, definitely Marcella's run impacted me. I think you know, we're women of color that have been laboring in this community for years, you know, without much fanfare, but doing the things that we know our folks need, right? And being honored and privileged to be able to do that in the ways that we can. And so, but often not visualizing ourselves in those roles, right? So it is true to say, you know, when you see someone that looks like you, there is a switch to say, oh yeah, maybe I can do that. Maybe there are spaces for me. And so, you know, even despite all the, you know, all the preparation you have, there's still that kind of gremlin in the back of your head that says you're not enough. It's not made for you. So, you know, being a part of her race, learning more and more about what was happening and seeing her, you know, work so hard and be victorious. And, you know, in that part of the race, because we know, you know, implementation is the next phase, right? It all really kind of had a big influence on me. And I was just so honored. And, you know, honestly, being a movement candidate was like, being with the DSA slate was like, is so exciting to me. I was like, yes, that's what I want to do. Like, I don't want to be the only one. I've done that most of my life. I've been the only one in rooms and in spaces, and there's nothing more demoralizing than to be the only one. And so I really just absolutely gravitated to the idea of being part of this movement, of being part of a slate, of being able to do this work together. And it has played out the way I envisioned it. You know, it's so incredible to have comrades that you could talk to, and both who are candidates and those behind the scenes, right? And those across the movement who are doing all kinds of different work. So it's been really great.
Yeah, and I saw on your Twitter that you were at the March for Palestine in Bay Ridge with your daughter. You know, DSA has been criticized for questioning whether, you know, taxpayer dollars should be funding city council trips to Israel. I just kind of wanted to give you a chance to maybe talk a little bit about, like, why you were there. If you have anything to say on that.
Yeah, sure. You know, I think my daughter was going to go with or without me. Was what she made clear to me. And I was happy to stand with her because together we stand, and we stand for justice, dignity, and equality for all people. And as coming from a country that continues to be colonized by the United States, you know, I definitely have a sympathy already for what that means to my cultural, national, you know, identity. And, you know, Palestinians right now in this system, you know, are an oppressed people, are people who have not, been given the space and the self-determination to do what they need. And so it was so important to stand for the dignity of all people. I mean, we do not believe in oppression. We do not believe in imperialism, like point blank. So I think it's important to be consistent in standing for liberation for everyone, because I do believe our collective liberation is bound. And we have a longstanding Palestinian community here, and I have heard the stories, you know, families have family members back in the West Bank and Gaza Strip, and I hear the horrors that they are experiencing on a daily basis. And it felt important to support our community members.
So there's about a month left before the election, June 22nd. If people want to learn more about your campaign, if they want to get involved, how can they do that?
Oh, yes, we'd love to have you, because this is a grassroots campaign. So everyone's labor is deeply, deeply appreciated. And, you know, you can definitely connect with us on our website, which is alexaforcouncil.com, and it's F-O-R, not the number. Or our social media handle is also the same thing, alexaforcouncil.com. And we have all the listings of all the incredible canvas. We do in-person canvas and tabling and phone banking and whatever it is we need to do to connect with our community members, we are probably doing it. And we absolutely invite everyone to participate. It's been really, really fun. So, bienvenido. We welcome everyone.
Amazing. Anything else you'd like to add today?
Yeah, just, I think I'm feeling really optimistic, not only about our campaign, but, about the slate and the future of the city, right? Where I think we're going to be welcoming a class of a lot more women, which I'm very excited about, and breaking through the 18 of 51, which, we have not been able to get beyond that in terms of any gender parity in city council. But breaking through that and really pushing hard for, our socialist platform, defunding the NYPD, I think it's within reach. I think fighting for all the things that we need for our community, our community is excited. So I'm feeling real pumped up. I know we've got to slay a lot of beasts in the meantime, but I'm feeling pretty excited about where we are and the campaign we're running and, being part of this incredible movement. It's really, truly wonderful.
Well, thanks so much for being out there fighting, and thanks so much for being on RPM and getting our WBI listeners to get to know you a bit.
Thank you. Oh, and I have to say, I hope everyone ranks me number one. I forget that. June 22nd is the Democratic primary. So I hope to see y'all there.
That was Alexa Aviles, DSA endorsed candidate for City Council District 38. And you've been listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener sponsor WBAI on 99.5. We're almost at the end of our show, but we do have time for one or two quick callers tonight. So if you have any thoughts about what you heard, give us a call at 212-209-2877. We would love to hear from you. Again, that number is 212-209-2877. Give us a call here at RPM. And as always, remembered, we are listener sponsored, so please also become a WBAI buddy. And if you have any thoughts, you can give us a call at 212-209-2877. Have anyone on the line yet? Doesn't look like we have anyone on the line right now, which, is so surprising. I thought a lot of people would have thoughts about the city council race. But I'm happy to take these last final minutes just to encourage everybody. I'm somebody who does not really always like to knock on doors. But no matter what issues you're for or, whether you're down with DSA or not, I really encourage everybody to talk to their community members because that's really where our power lies. And that is where our liberation will come from. And, being out in the streets, both in Astoria this week and Sunset Park, it was just very exciting to see how enthusiastic people are to make change. But there is a lot against us. Change does not come easy in Albany or at City Hall. So if you do want to see change in New York City, across New York State, you can definitely look into Alexa's campaign. Again, her website was alexaforcouncil.com. If you would like to get more information on the campaign for public power, that is ecosocialist.nyc/events. And, you know, you've been listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast app. I'm Lee Zishi. You can connect with us after the show by emailing us at revolutionsnyc@gmail.com. And you can find us on our website, revolutionsperminute.simplecast.com. or on Twitter at NYCRPM. And again, from RPM, Free Palestine, this is Lee Zishi. Have a great night, New York City.